treatment. This time we're especially excited because we have a really special episode coming up because we have switched seats.
Yeah, that's super cool. We were invited by Professor Salzman from Foot and Ankle International, and he interviewed us on his podcast regarding our manuscript, Compensation of Dynamic Fixation Systems in the Quality of Reduction of Distal Tibiofibular Joint in Acute Syndesmotic Complex Injuries, a CT-based analysis.
We had an in-depth conversation on the topic of the paper, as well as various aspects in the treatment of syndesmotic injuries. We hope you enjoy the show, and the following you will listen to the FIA podcast.
This is Charlie Salzman, editor of Foot and Ankle International. Today, talking with Drs. Hans Polza and Sebastian Bombach, who are the key authors of November's lead paper in Foot and Ankle International entitled Compensation of Dynamic Fixation Systems and the Quality of Reduction of the Distal Tibiofibular Joint in Acute Syndesmotic Complex Injuries, a CT-based analysis. Drs. Polzar and Bombach are in the Department of Orthopedics and Trauma Surgery, Musculoskeletal University Center in Munich University Hospital, Munich, Germany. Welcome to the podcast. I would like to start by asking you to present a brief summary of your paper for our listeners.
Thanks, Prof. Salzman, for having us on your podcast. As you already mentioned, we are based in Munich, and currently the Oktoberfest is going on. We are recording today from the from our downtown campus, which is just a couple of hundred meters away from the Oktoberfest. And so we do get a quite high caseload of ankle fractures out of the extraordinary right now. So that topic fits well. We've been using dynamic fixation systems for since 2015. And round about the same time, we started to implement that postoperatively, we do bilateral CT imaging. So when we fix the syndesmosis, we use a Weber clamp and then we drill a hole through the fibula and the tibia. And after that, we place the tightrope. So you would imagine that the drilling tunnels we see in the fibula and the tibia are aligned. But on post-op CT scans, we found that they often are misaligned. They are tilted, they are translated. And we were not the first to recognize that. But in the paper you mentioned we were talking about today, we were interested in to investigate in which direction does the tightrope compensate? Does it compensate towards a more anatomical reduction of the distal tibiofibular joint, or does it misalign? So we identified all patients that we treated with a suture button system and post-op bilateral CT imaging over the time period 2015 to 2020, and that totaled in 147 patients. It was of no matter whether these were fracture cases or isolated syndesmotic injuries. And we then analyzed the post-op CT scans, first for the degree of reduction of the distal tibiofibular joint, comparing it to the healthy side, usually using previously published methods. And then we measured the translation and angulation of the drilling tunnel within the fibula in relation to the tibia. And in the second step, so with that, we knew, okay, 17% of ankles were malaligned or formally malaligned if we take those rigorous criteria. And then we recalculated the translation and angulation we found from the drilling tunnels and read the stats on the alignment of the distal tibiofibular joint. And doing that, we found that 35%, so double the number, would have been malaligned if we had used, for example, a syndesmotic screw instead of a suture button system. I think that was the main finding of our paper.
It's very interesting. Just so we're clear, can you repeat and maybe give a little more detail in the method generally used by surgeons at your center to reduce the syndesmosis and place the tight ropes or the flexible fixation?
So when we have a fracture case, we first fix all the fractures. We anatomically reduce all the bony injuries. And after fixation of the bony injuries, we then test for syndesmotic instability, We personally use the external rotation test. If it's clear, we decide for syndesmotic fixation. If it's unclear, we compare it to the uninjured site, the external rotation test, to see any site differences. So if we see a site difference or it's an obvious instability of the syndesmotic complex, we then place a Weber clamp, and we are very careful to place the Weber clamp on the middle of the medial malleolus and the middle of the lateral malleolus in the so-called neutral position, because by placement of the Weber clamp, you can already produce malreduction. So we are very careful to place the Weber clamp in the correct position in order to reduce the fibula. And then we place the K-wire for the flexible implant. And then we normally, this is also a matter of debate in the course of development, we perform an intraoperative 3D scan to ensure correct placement of the wire and to ensure the correct positioning of the fibula. And whenever we confirm the correct positioning of both, we then drill the canal for the flexible system and implant the flexible system. We do this in neutral position of the foot, of the ankle. So we have some extent of not dorsiflexion, but neutral position. And then we remove the Weber clamp and perform another X-ray and external rotation test to ensure the stability.
Thank you. During this study period, did you have the CT scans or three-dimensional imaging in the operating room? Or is that a newer, if I understand what you just said correctly, you were using CT more recently. Is that correct?
We actually have the opportunity to do intraoperative CT scanning actually prior to 2015. So we do have some routine of intraoperative 3D imaging. And we actually used that data set to analyze the influence of the intraoperative 3D imaging on the quality of reduction, especially in the setting when we use a flexible system. Because as we show in the study we're discussing right now, we do see this the self-centering effect of the suture button system. And then we know from previous studies, and then if you look at the data, it's kind of divergent. There are some authors that say you definitely have to do a 3D scan and you can judge the distal tibial fibular joint really well. And there are other authors who are not that convinced of it. And we try to put that into perspective with the suture button system. And actually, Hans, he started with a 3D scanning. He's a bigger 3D scanning guy than I am. So he's doing more of those scans on a regular basis. I, especially with the knowledge with the suture button system, not always do them, only in complex cases. And we did the math on that, and we actually found that the effect of the intraoperative CT scan is not as high as it is for the compensation or the compensational mechanism of the suture button system. And another argument often put into the field for the intraop CT scan is that you don't have to do any post-op CT scans, bilateral post-op scans, but we actually found a false negative rate of 14%. So an intraoperative CT scan does not preclude any post-operative CT imaging.
Boy, that's interesting, isn't it? Very difficult problem to treat, obviously, despite using all this technology. So I want to get back to the self-centering concept. It looks to me that many of the cases did self-centered, but some of them went the other way. And maybe you can speak to that. Do you think that's related to any technical issue with putting these in, or is it hard to know at this point?
We cannot prove this definitely because we didn't analyze it yet in detail, but we will. But from our experience, it's not that much of a technical problem, but it's rather the result of the degree of syndesmotic instability. We are now understanding that it's not a question, is the syndesmotic complex unstable, yes or no, but there are several degrees of syndesmotic instability. So we now came to the point that we differentiate two ligament injuries from three ligament injuries? So is it a rupture of the AITFL plus the interosseous ligament? This is what we consider a two ligament injury. And we still have some constraint of the posterior aspect, but we already see rotational and sagittal instability, but we don't have the full extent of instability. And then we have the three ligament injury, which involves also the posterior aspect. And then maybe we come to the point that we call it the four ligament injury whenever the deltoid complex is also disrupted. So what I'm trying to say is there's various degrees of syndesmotic instability. And our feeling, and we will get into that in future studies, is that the higher the degree of instability, the higher the risk that you end up with a malreduced fibula, even with the self-centering capability of the flexible implant. So it has its limitations. And when we have a two ligament injury, we are pretty certain that it will find its way using the flexible implant. If we have a three ligament or four ligament injury, things are getting more complex.
That's great. It shows that when you work hard on a problem like you two have done for years, that you begin to see the nuances better than the rest of us can. Thank you for sharing that. Let me ask a separate question that I think everyone wants to know. Do you currently use screws for acute syndesmotic complex injuries?
That's a good question. As Hans already outlined, there are different degrees or grades of instability. So for a two ligamentous injury, we would either use a suture button system or do an anatomical reconstruction by augmentation of the ventral syndesmosis. For three ligamentous injuries, where we have a high degree of instability, and that again was definitely one conclusion we also drew from our study, the feeling we have, and we did not analyze that in detail, but the feeling we have, the higher the degree of instability, the higher we see a compensation of the tightrope, or the more play we see within the tightrope. So we don't have a good feeling to place one, or the alternative would be two suture button systems. And in those cases, we would go for one suture button system in case the deep deltoid is still intact, then remove our reduction device, the Weber clamp, move the anchor through full range of motion, and then place a screw proximal to the suture button system, freehand. And other cases, obviously, are revision cases, where we maybe not even go for two, but three or four syndesmotic screws, especially if we talk about diabetic or frail patients. They're definitely not going to follow our instructions of partial weight bearing, because they possibly cannot.
I guess I should ask you about removing hardware now. do you ever remove tight ropes? Do you remove screws? Do you let them break? How do you approach that?
So the flexible implants, we do not remove routinely. The most common reason to remove them is because the patients will ask for it, especially because they have a problem with the medial button. That's the most common complaint the patients have. So if they have a pain there and they want to have it removed, remove it. We do see our patients which have been treated with a flexible device every year, and we do take an X-ray in the outpatient clinic, and we do see what we call a tunnel widening once in a while. Due to the flexibility, we see that the drilling tunnel is getting bigger, is the diameter is increasing over time. And when we see this tunnel widening, we do recommend removal of the flexible. When regarding the screws, we are developing a little more into the American way. The European or the German tradition was to remove the syndesmotic screw after 6 weeks only. And I am pretty convinced. I think we do not have very hard data, but we have all the studies are showing in the same direction. 6 weeks is too short. We did not receive a stable healing of the syndesmotic complex after 6 weeks. So we believe it's too short, and therefore we remove them after 3 months, but we are getting there to the point that we leave him in and let him break. I think there's multiple studies suggesting that this might be the direction we should go.
Yeah. It's hard to change when you're used to taking them out to letting them break. Two last questions. Do you do anything differently now than you were doing during the study period that you would recommend others to consider? I think you covered a little bit of that with the trying to understand the degree of instability and number of ligaments torn. Anything else you might want to add?
I think the study again proof, and that is one of the most interesting parts in the field of foot and ankle surgery, that there is limited evidence to whatever we do. So despite the tremendous number of ankle fractures, we still actually don't have any solid data showing us that a two ligamentous injury within a fracture case actually does need a stabilization. Maybe it does not. We're missing RCTs on that. As we already pointed out, we've changed a little our algorithm using a suture button system and a syndesmotic screw. We also were somewhat surprised of the 17% of mal reduction rate we had despite using a suture button system. So what we started to do is we not only rely on the Weber clamp, but we now do actually expose. We usually use a dorsal lateral approach, and if you extend it really anteriorly, you can expose the anterior lateral aspect of the tibia. So we actually have a look to get an idea of whether it's reduced or not. And in case it's an anterior bony avulsion injury, we will try to fix it, or if these are some really small fragments of the Wagstaff or the tubercular chaput, we would remove them and then under direct visualization actually do a ventral augmentation like an anatomic repair. That is something we also started to do due to the data we found. I think these are the most prominent effects that were issues that affected our daily practice.
That's great. Well, I look forward to having you send in an analysis of that approach at some point, because that's a interesting evolution that certainly makes sense to me. I want to thank you, Drs. Polza and Baumbach. I am Charlie Salzman, editor of Foot and Ankle International. Today, I've had the distinct pleasure of talking with Dr. Hans Polza and Sebastian Baumbach, who are the senior authors of the lead paper in this November's issue of Foot and Ankle International. It's entitled Compensation of Dynamic Fixation Systems and the Quality of Reduction of the Distal Tip Fib Joint in Acute Syndesmotic Complex Injuries, a CT-based analysis. Dr. Polzar and Baumbach, on behalf of our listeners, I thank you for joining us today to share your experience and insights and understanding about this difficult problem, trying to have a quality reduction of the distal tibia fibula joint after acute syndesmotic complex injuries. Thank you so much for being part of the program.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening in, and we hope to hear you next time.